Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to MitoActions Roundtable Discussion with Robert Harper, Bioscience Founder and CEO of IVD Solutions, and Pranav Panalluri, Strategy Lead at IVD Solutions. They're joining us today to discuss understanding the potential of a CPK meter. IVDS is a biotech company developing a CPK meter called CPK Now. This small handheld device will allow patients to check their creatine kinase level quickly from a finger stick sample so they and their care team can react sooner and monitor their care more effectively. This presentation will discuss the science behind the technology, how this meter could be used, where the research development currently stands, and what the pipeline could look like. My name is Stephanie Harry. I'm a parent of a teen with LCHAD and the patient support coordinator at MitoAction. I'll be your host for today. Today's presentation will be recorded and available on MitoAction's website in the coming days. This space is a little different than our traditional expert series. We set this call up as a Zoom meeting, which means that you have both video and audio access. We encourage you to turn your videos on if you would like, but please keep yourself muted throughout the presentation, as this will give everyone a more pleasurable experience. If you have questions throughout the presentation, please put them in the chat and I'll ask them at the end. If time allows, I will stop the recording towards the end of our time, and we'll use this time to discuss and/or ask questions that are preferred to remain unrecorded. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce our speakers. Robert Harper is an experienced redox chemist and diagnostics entrepreneur with more than 30 years of leadership in translational research and development, specializing in blood separation, enzymatic assay design, and colorimetric redox chemistry. He has guided cross-functional teams in transforming complex scientific concepts into practical, commercially viable point-of-care solutions. Pranav received an MS biotechnology from Johns Hopkins University and a BS in biotechnology from Rutgers University. He brings 15 years of experience supporting pharmaceutical, biotech, and medical device organizations with portfolio strategy, product launches, clinical development planning, and partnerships. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know there's a lot of buzz in our FED community about the potential of a CPK meter, and a number of our families have joined our FAOD conference and met you guys in person, and are really excited to hear more about the updates of what's going on with the CPK meter and the development. So, thanks again for joining us. And Pranav, I'm going to turn it over to you if you'd like to go ahead and share your screen.
All right, let me do that. And I think, Rob, if you want to get started with your intro in the meantime, I can hand it over to me. Rob, you're on mute, I think. There you
Hi, I'm Rob Harper, founder of In Vitro Diagnostic Solutions in 2017. Our mission is to develop simple to use, low cost, accurate point of care devices for patients with inborn errors of metabolism and chronic disorders. I started again 2017. Currently all of our funding has been through the National Institute of Health to develop the CPK Now, the PKU Now, the HCU Now, G6PD, and we're looking as well as kidney disease.
Sure. So hello everyone, my name is Pranav Panalluri, and I've been supporting Rob on this important mission for the past almost 9 years as well. And I work more on the commercial strategy side of things. So for me, it's more about it's taking the science, translating what we've all the science that we've done and Rob and the team have really put together, and trying to translate that into to impact for patients and the physicians that we work with. As you all know, and the reason we're here today, we're here to talk to you more about the CPK Now. It's our point of care CK measuring device, and it's something that we're really excited about because it has been a lot of work to put together, and it's been a long time coming. And so we're excited to share that more about that with you. And I think a lot of this we just touched on. So it's my first slide here. Can everyone see my screen, by the way? Stephanie, yeah, nod your head. Okay, great. So you've heard from Rob. I think this is the mission and the vision really was to build this universal platform. And there's lots of research underway to kind of cover a gamut of indications and conditions. But our lead program is in PKU, and I think I know, it's not super relevant for everyone, but just so everyone understands, like as we are currently in clinical trials with PKU now, it is a really positive signal for the overall platform and whether this works or not. And we have a lot of good data so far. So hopefully, if everything goes well, we'll be submitting to the FDA late this year, early next year. And we'll have a de-risked program, and that we feel more comfortable and confident in as we push more effort into CPK now. And so at the moment we're planning to start clinical trials, or we think that we could start clinical trials in 2027. A lot of research and development takes time, and so we won't hold ourselves to that date, but we will really push ourselves as much as we can to get it out there as soon as possible. The funding we've gotten has been non-dilutive to date. It's been all through NIH. That I think that just shows that it's a testament to the great science that Rob and team have put together, and the ability to convince and share all the great science to the NIH, the National Institute of Health. Even in these times where it's somewhat uncertain with how NIH funding has gone, and overall been very successful in raising money and keeping the company afloat and building a team and building a breadth of the portfolio. As you can see, there's lots of patents that the team has developed and lots of good verification validation studies, which are an important step to getting a and to and those are all done in the lab, so preclinical in a way, and before we get into testing patients and test patient blood, and we have a big manufacturing space. So all of that is really important, but I think more than anything, actually with MitoAction, and maybe some of you were part of this, a couple of years ago we launched a market research survey, and just to get a feel and for what the interest and level of sentiment was from the patient community. And I think that's my biggest bragging number here. Biggest bragging point is that over 150 of you have responded, and over the conferences, I think we definitely have more numbers here than that. But and have expressed high enthusiasm for a product like this. Thank you, Lindsay. And that's exactly what motivates us and brings a smile to all of our team. Who there's a lot more behind the scenes that are involved with this. So thank you all for that, and thank you all for participating today, because I think it's experiences like this that help us have an appreciation for your day-to-day. And as we step out of the lab and take off our lab goggles and suits, and it's important for us to appreciate what you go through. It's white coats. So anyways, a lot of what you're seeing on this slide, I think it's a reality for you, for us. And when we present our overall overview, this is something that is shocking to a lot of folks, and they don't really appreciate the experience that a lot of the patients and caregivers go through, right? This is not just affecting the patients, it's the families, it's everybody, and it's really hard. So we appreciate that. We know that there's a lot of good evidence about how many patients there are in the world today, about 3K in the US, 85K worldwide, but that's probably a pretty major underdiagnosis. We know the incidence is 1 in 9,000, so that in reality, that should translate to something like a 20,000 to 30,000 number. Obviously, since newborn screening was only implemented in the mid-2000s, somewhat recently. That's why we think this underdiagnosis exists. There's also a lot of folks who just don't who fly under the radar, who don't have as severe a manifestation, and so there's definitely an underdiagnosis component here. But hopefully, with products like ours, we can help to improve that as well. And this the real and we as although we cannot solve, and what we're not here to do today is to solve, unfortunately, this condition, we can alleviate a lot of the concerns. And a big part of what you all go through is muscle pain, and muscle pain that can often lead to rhabdomyolysis. And that's the primary problem that we're here to address. And I think with proper monitoring and proper management, we can hopefully alleviate some of this and cause a lot of pain to go away, and also just minimize all the extra hassles that are associated with this, like going to the ER and having the uncertainty of whether your son or your child is going through growing pains versus having an event. So that's what we're here to do with our product. And so, as you all know, CK monitoring is essential. It's part of all sorts of guidelines. There's lots of documentation around it, as you can see here on the left-hand side. But the process is very tedious and cumbersome. We've heard it takes 2 weeks, even 2 months to get your results back. And so having to deal with that is it quite it leads to sometimes inactionable results because the episode could end by the time you go to the hospital and you're as an inpatient. We've heard it's very time consuming. It's inconvenient to have to go to a, at the drop of a dime, hearing the concerns of your child and having to rush to the ER. That's not easy. It's very difficult to deal with. And all the and at the end of the day, the outcomes may be poor and suboptimal because we don't manage this in time. And so all of this hopefully can be solved through the product that we're working on called the CPK Now. And the idea is for accurate, instant, easy measurement of CK levels. It's portable, as you can see here. And yes, as Sharika mentioned, not to mention increasing hospital traumas. Yep. No, that's a good point, Sharika. And so, this product, hopefully, it's a meter. The meter is really the main component here. It connects to the cell phone. So although all the technology is really happening in the meter, there's a lot of really valuable insights and analytics that can be supercharged by the phone because there's just so much data that we can collect there, and then you can have all the data visualized and easily tracked over time to understand how things are going. So I think the dual combo of the app and the meter is a really important value proposition for us. I think it's really exciting to be able to do that. It really I'll show you actually I should show you a little bit more about how this works. But essentially, you're taking a strip, which looks like this black piece here on the left-hand side. I realize my laser pointer is not working. Let me see if I can fix that. Oh well. Here. Laser pointer. Okay, cool. You want to see that laser? So this is the strip. It's just a small, it's about 2 inches. There's a little circle in it. That's where you would apply one small drop of blood and insert it into the meter. The meter would read it over few minutes and transmit the results directly to the phone. So it's super simple. Less than 5 minutes is the goal right now, and what we're seeing in other indications. And then you have your reading. And so ultimately, this should lead to better health outcomes, and that's the real goal, right? It's cool technology, but at the end of the day, what are we after? It's health outcomes. And so we think that this can help you make real-time decisions. Should you go to the hospital? Should you not? Should you do this? Should you perform this activity? Should you change your diet? Are there things that we could be doing to help manage your condition in real time? There's a component of increasing your engagement and compliance with just your overall routine. Ideally, this from the healthcare system, this does help reduce costs for the system, reduce costs for you as well. And so that's a lot of the different value propositions that we're honing in on, and there's a lot of seamless data sharing. And I think, yes, iOS and Android-based phones, the data sharing component as well. So you can set how you'd like this to be transmitted to your physician, and if there's two parents that need access to this, great. We can have or other family members or a caregiver or a nanny or someone can have access to the data as well, in order to manage the patient. So, and those are the main value propositions here, and those are the real kind of how we're thinking about this. And yeah, I'm going to turn it over to Rob next to talk more about the technology itself in the next slide.
Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks, Mito Action, and thanks, Pranav. I appreciate that. So the technologies really is a universal platform. So it's a the blood separation scheme is kind of the secret sauce. What you do is you input the test strip into the meter, which has three light, what they call light emitting diodes, and it measures the amount of reflectance of the end color, and that's proportional to the concentration. Okay. And then there's the top layer is a uniform spreading layer. And what that does, it takes the 20 microliters of blood, which is a fixed capillary volume, and distributes it uniformly across the primary blood separation, which is a glass fiber pad, which has what they call agglutinating agents. And those agents clump the cells, they agglomerate the cells. Then there's a smaller pore size secondary blood separation membrane. The accuracy we're still working on. The detection level is really, we take that fourth layer and we plug and play different enzymes and indicators to target the specific biomarkers. In this case, it's CK, and everything gets read by that meter, and then the results get directly uploaded to the cell phone.
Slide.
So this is essentially right now we have to use purchased samples from a biobank, and then we have to spike those samples with CK. So our analytical range is, we don't know the LOB, LOD, we're working on that, but it's just 0 to 60,000 units per liter. And the results are about 5 minutes or so. And so the dose response now, we get a cubic fit, and then we generate that cubic fit into our calculations for linearity. And you can see the linearity up through 60,000. At 50, there's a little bit of scatter, but it's something that we're working on.
Yes, and I think someone in the chat asked about accuracy. This slide kind of represents that. And for the folks that aren't fully haven't who have, don't have chemistry degrees or biology degrees, I think what we're seeing here, this R squared of 0.98, and the best you can get is one, right? So seeing this is really kind of what you want. You want it to be as close as possible to your comparator. And the fact that you're seeing this dose response curve, meaning that it's responding to different levels of CK over time.
So each line, each colored line represents the next level, and the importance of this is to get better resolution between each line, right? So the more resolution, the more precision and accuracy that you have. Like with any glucometer or any other reflectance-based system, there's only so much color that can be generated. So the higher end are give you less resolution, but it's still very manageable, as you can see by Pranav's our linearity and Pranav's point that the R squared is 0.98.
And further testing is required. So this is, we've done this in CPK now in the spiked blood samples. Eventually we'll have to move it on, but we're still refining the test. And that's where you mentioned 2027 is more when we'll start trying this out in actual humans and patients.
It's very difficult for us. It's very difficult to I don't know, I can't read the resolution between 30 and 40 at this point, from this plot, but we can certainly find that out for you. It's enough to give us reasonably good accuracy. The goal is for the FDA is 10% CVs, coefficient of variation. So that's what we're shooting for, and there should not be a problem with this particular assay. We're very pleased with the results.
Thanks, Christina, for that question, comment, actually. Yeah, so it's good to know that in practice it doesn't matter as much. But it's good. And thank you, Jennifer, for agreeing. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, the accuracy at the lower end. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's the importance is kind of like where the clinical decisions are made and what those actionable items are, right? So if you're at 50 or 60, I think the clinical decisions would be the same. 40, 50, and 60. So those are things that Inform has published, and those are things we're
Good.
working with Dr. Vakli and Longo on.
Yeah, I'll switch back to the MyoKinase slide, but since we're talking about it.
Yeah, I don't think, I think there was a draft that Stephanie sent me of updated decisions, age and levels and the monitoring and then the treatment. But we had, this was the original one that Dr. Vakli had sent me that we used in the application. So as you can see, most of the higher levels go, require hospitalization or need immediate attention. So the key point to this is that every biomarker that we have, it goes directly to the cell phone. So we can add the latest clinical guidelines in the cell phone and what those actionable items are based on age, based on the concentration of the CPK as well.
Yes, and this can be tweaked, obviously. As science
Right.
progresses, we will be able to progress it. It's a pretty simple tweak on the algorithm and for the app that's calculating all of this. The main thing is that, as you saw in those lines, we're able to get that resolution. So, quite exciting. Another really exciting piece I'll let Rob cover.
Yeah, so the biggest interferon is what they call MyoKinase. It's intracellular. But if the sample becomes hemolyzed even slightly, it'll release MyoKinase into the plasma. And we were able to limit or mitigate the MyoKinase on the impact of the CPK. Myokinase uses the same substrate and has the same kind of systematic pathway to generate color or signal. So, based on several improvements on pH and other things, we were able to minimize the myokinase up through 800 units per liter at both the 200 units per liter CPK and then at 60,000. So, that's the strongest improvement. I think that stands apart from the Piccolo and other reference instruments that have sufficient interference from MyoKinase. It's a powerful development.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the biggest hindrances to advancing a CK level, CK meter in the past. So,
So if you have just back up, if you have MyoKinase in your plasma sample, your CPK results will substantially increase. They'll be read as CPK.
exactly. So it causes a disruption and it's just inaccurate results. So this is a really important innovation that Rob and the team have come up with, in addition to the blood separation, or in addition to other blood separation components. All right, and with that, I'll take over again. So as we talked about, we have an app built out. We have this working for now CPK as well. And what this helps us do is a lot of things, right? I think it's helpful to get, your CK level at one point in time, but being able to track it in one place over repeated, whether if it's multiple times in a day multiple times in a week or year, month. Let's say you've had an incident and you want to just track to see, how it's going down. That's a really powerful analysis that you can now do. We also have the ability to share, like we talked about, and monitor your progress, like I just said. And given the population, a lot of the patients and the folks afflicted by this are children, and so we are also thinking about the component of gamified notifications, where there's perhaps a little bit more of a interest to gamified notifications that will help remind folks to pay more attention to this and stay on it, and perhaps reward individuals with badges or awards of some sort. I think of it like the Duolingo owl, if you will. So we want to be able to make this a little bit more fun and approachable, and not just a boring app that you have to that you're it's a homework assignment. We want this to be fun to some extent. Because this is a lifestyle at the end of the day. We need this to be a constant. We need constant support. So,
Just real
yeah.
quickly, Pranav, is that we need your help with this, right? We need the care providers, the clinicians, the dietitians, and the patients to tell us what important information should be in the Connect with the dashboard and what features should be there. I think the actual patients know what is needed, and the care providers know what is needed. So we can build out the dashboard any way we want, but that feedback from you would be very much appreciated.
Yeah, definitely. So if anyone has any ideas, feel free to type them in the chat. No idea is a bad idea. And we'll definitely work again with Stephanie and team to make like a survey and try to launch it again in due time. But yeah, happy to hear any ideas because a lot of this is draft at this point. So at least version 2.0 and 3.0, these are just things that we've thought about for the future. But yeah, low
So,
consumption is actually very possible because we do this with protein today.
yeah, right now we use the USDA for PKU, and we could do the same for CPK regarding fat concentration intake, and as well as any medical food medications, things like that. We're trying to automate that through image analysis, but it's very difficult.
The previous survey that we worked with Stephanie on the Mito Action team, this was a lot of your feedback. So this honestly inspires our team every day to get in the lab and do what they do. When they see feedback like this, to know that this is something that really matters to you, it truly does make such a difference to everything on our end. We also appreciate, obviously positive sentiment, and we also appreciate just the way that this is paradigm changing in that, you don't have the opportunity to test as much as you'd like today, but in the future, you could see this being done almost once a month or more. So I think that's really telling for us and that's really helpful. And I think it changes even how we think about the app. Like if we're engaging with this product on a monthly basis versus once weekly or daily, that shifts things and how we will consider it. So yeah. So thank you again for this feedback and your continued support. We've obviously worked with Mito Action, but we also work with a lot of other important entities in the CPK space. Obviously, physicians like Dr. Longo, Dr. Vockley, Dr. LoPiccolo, very important folks in the community. There's so many others that aren't represented on the slide, but just we wanted to shout out to all the folks who've given us the support to date and within the patient advocacy side, the healthcare provider side, as well as industry, talking to food companies and pharmaceutical companies as well. So, thank you. This isn't easy. Obviously, as a small company, we are nimble. We get to move fast as a result of that, and we get to have engagements like this where we can ask you point blank, what do you want to see in an app? And so we have a lot of advantages on our side in terms of getting this to market, but it is it is hard, it is expensive, it is it's a lot of work, and so we are looking for partnerships. I don't know if this is mostly, this is a slide that we usually use for industry folk, but if anyone's connected with anybody, please let us know. I mean, a lot of our work is funded through the NIH to date, and so we're just helping, with additional funding, additional partnerships, we can hopefully accelerate our timelines and get this out to you sooner. So with that, I think I can share with you a very draft timeline. I don't want you all to be too bought into this, but it is something that we hold ourselves to internally, and so we thought it'd be okay to share with you all as well in terms of how we think about it. So we're really in the trenches right now in verification and validation. And what that means is basically in lab work, and we're setting it all up so that we hopefully can initiate a pivotal study in 2027, and then we would use that data to submit for a 510K in the 2028 timeframe. Like I said, as exciting as it is now, and we're generating good data already, it's still a little bit away, but we appreciate your support because all good things take time, right? So thank you for all of your support and your time today as well. I think we have that I think that's all the slides we have, but happy to answer any questions. And maybe Rob has any
Yeah,
closing
I just want to jump into the previous slide. I think there's an underappreciation of the requirements from the FDA that have to be proven before you can even write a submission, which is they go by what they call CLSI guidelines, and there's 17 studies that have to be done, including shipping temperatures and open vial temperatures, and you have three sites that have to have controls between each sites, and then 40 patients per site. So it's very, very long and laborious process that has to be done for the FDA prior to the 510K submission.
I think that's super helpful. And I don't know if there's other ways that you guys can expound, because I think from the patient side of things, sometimes it's hard to know what are the barriers along the way that make the timeline sometimes have to be a little bit longer, or what's going on behind the scenes. So I think it's really helpful to just kind of hear one of those barriers. I don't know if there's any other barriers that you're able to share that can come up, maybe even from your experience with the PK meter, like some of the things that were unexpected that you're like, oh, okay, and so now we pivot and this added 3 extra months to our project that we didn't otherwise, know would exist. Is there anything like that that you can share?
So the first thing would be with the verification and validation study. So it starts on the bench, right? And you have hand coating and hand casting, meaning you coat the membranes. We have three membranes in one mesh, and then you do performance testing, and then once you have optimized it on the bench, we move it to a coating system, and then you have three lots of verification. Then you have to run through the 17 CLSI guidelines and modify your SOPs accordingly. And then you have to do three lots of validation. And it's very labor intensive and time intensive. And then the other thing is the IRB approvals, the time it takes for the universities to from our IRB to get through the IRB, patient training. Proper patient training, it's probably the most important thing that we have learned. And then just patient compliance is really important. We've really found through PKU that the patients who are coming to the conferences are the patients that we're targeting because they show the interest. If it's a patient that's just going in for CK results, then they may not want to run through the test. So it's really about advertising the test, patient training, and obviously the R&D work and validation.
So when you guys move to the space of clinical trials, then it sounds like there's going to be, time to train the patients on how to use the product. How does that typically look?
Well, we asked them to go through a video that we have online. And then once they have that video, there's like a fail safe where the care provider who's doing the testing, the patient has to fill out a form whether it was acceptable or not. And then the care provider does one stick. He looks at the results, and then the patients do other sticks, and then we have comparing the PKU now to a venous draw, and that's how we kind of get our results. And the sample handling has to be done properly as well.
So if you want to go, you go ahead and stop sharing your screen. We're gonna answer a couple questions that have come through, but I think it's really important. Something that you mentioned at the beginning is just what's kind of going on in the PKU community and in regards to their meter getting progressed and how that's kind of a win for both spaces. I think in the rare disease community, we totally understand and validate that like any win for a community, whether it's FAAD, PKU, mitochondrial disease, like it's a win for the whole. But I like how you guys made the connection that it's kind of a template, so it's going to help this to move
Exactly.
forward in a different kind of way. And that's super encouraging, I think, for our community.
I think additionally to that, to that point, Stephanie, is that we have what they call a quality management system that you have to set up and follow from the FDA and all the standard operating procedures, all the documentation that we've done. For PKU, we can go in now as the templates and modify that to update that. That will help us expedite the quality management system for CPK.
So I'm going to back up a little bit, and I do see keep putting your questions in the chat. We're going to get to all those questions. I'm going to kind of go back towards the beginning of the presentation when you show the variation of the CPK that can be monitored, right? From like zero to up to 60,000. And you talked a little bit about like some of the variation and complications in that. But I'm curious if, let's say, your CPK is higher than 60,000, let's say it's 70,000, it's something that's not measurable. How would that potentially appear on your CPK meter so you know that it's not an error from the standpoint of like your product failure, right? Like there's a product failure, but that like, okay, it's super high, I need to go. Because although many people will experience dark colored urine when CPK is higher than 60,000, that's not the case for everybody. Is there something that will kind of come across the screen that will notify?
So we have an analytical range. We have to determine what they call the limit of quantitation, and that's the lower end. And then if the value that is obtained is below that LOQ, we will say below and what that value is. If it's above 60,000, it'll say greater than 60,000. And then sometimes you can tag that number with actionable items, so.
So will the goal be for when you're talking about the app, like will the goal be that a provider has access to that app too, or is it something then patients have to report to their provider and or like is this something that you guys are trying to decide now how that works? Would it go straight to Epic, like if there's like a reading or what are y'all's thoughts about that?
Well, we have everything's HIPAA compliant and is encrypted. All the data can be sent. That's what we're working on now with the PKU Now Connect. And that information can be presented to the care provider and historical, as well as kind of a closed loop system to the patient to kind of monitor their CK over time. And then potentially generate algorithms based on fat content, medical food content, things like that. So, and I hope patients can believe that this would help twice a week, right? So if it's that easy, that simple, and because the directions are used are right on the screen, you don't have to walk through a manual. You just tap the screen, it goes right to the next step.
Okay. So all the instructions are going to be right on the screen to just
Right,
kind of walk you through.
displays it. It displays everything that you need to do.
It's helpful, we have a 3-minute video I can present.
Yeah, sure.
Let me do that right now.
Okay. While you're pulling that up, I'm going to read this question because it kind of goes back to what you guys were just talking about. I just want to make sure that we answered it in its entirety. This patient said, I'm thinking about a bit of the potential positives and negatives of data reuse and access. Curious if you're using AI, LLMs, and processing the data. And if so, does your company provide the data to these companies intentionally or not? Does your company get access to data on variables other than CPK? More generally, who owns or has access to or can use the data? Will the data be available for scientific reanalysis publication? So there's a lot of different questions in
Yeah,
there.
I think I broadly answered that in the chat too. I think it's at the moment, no, we're operating independently and we are completely self-operated, so no partnerships, no other companies are involved.
No, and it's such a touchy gray area about the data and who owns the data and what is there any valuation to data from a business side? But we're right now everything's developed in-house and we really just don't know besides the patient and the care provider. We could certainly make it available for research. But I don't know beyond that at this point. And we're not using AI at this point. But that'll get better, right? And the goal would be to take photos of your meal and then and to do fat content etc on that, and use that instead of actually weighing your food or doing things that you have to take. And again, I saw the question about hydration, and yeah, that's very important as well.
So, if patients have other suggestions, because I know there's going to be some patients that are viewing this after this meeting, if they have other suggestions as to what would be helpful data to be collected, how would you prefer them? Would you prefer them to contact me, or would you prefer them to, is there somebody in your office that you would prefer them to contact in regards to those ideas?
An email in the chat, and then you can use that. That's our team email, and
Depend. I
usually
mean,
it's never gotten.
if they're comfortable sending their contact information, yeah, we can send them to Allie. She's working on the Allie Sinatra. She's our newly clinical affairs specialist, and she can compile all those questions.
Okay.
But
So
also put
no,
the
oh, go
email
ahead.
with our team email, just so you have in the chat, our team email, so that it usually gets triaged to one of us pretty quickly.
So I'm
Use
going to
the
say
website.
that out loud just because, again, there's going to be people watching this after the
Oh,
fact.
sure.
So if you have suggestions or ideas, don't hesitate to send it to admin, admin at ivd.solutions. And or you are also welcome to email me and I can get it to the right place. I am S Harry, SHARRY at mitoaction.org. And or you can also go to IVD Solutions website and hit the contact us button. So I see, Pranav, that you pulled up. This is PKU now, so this is going to show a little bit maybe about how that meter is used and that's transferable to the CPK now, I guess is what you're suggesting.
Correct. Yeah, it's basically the same process. It's the same process, different readout, obviously. So you can see it in action here. So the kit itself would come something like this. You have the meter, all that. You can open up the mobile app. So the left-hand side screen here is showing you the mobile app. That looks like. So you scan with your phone, just on your Android or Apple, just scan the QR code. It'll tell you a lot number, which is basically how we track the different strips that we're producing. You can enter your ID or your name. There it goes. So, like I said earlier, you have a little test strip about 2 inches and really thin. You fit it into the device, which has an LED, so light emitting diodes at the bottom of it. We ask that you wash your hands, sing happy birthday while you do it, and prepare for sample collection. So many of you, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Lancet devices, but these are basically devices that very common in diabetes, for example, that you use to prick your finger to get a small amount of blood. You'll see here what that looks like. Again, it just has to fit in that drop and basically fill up this, you'll see in a second, the tube.
You have to, you have to wipe away the very small drop to get rid of the interstitial fluid.
Yeah, so you're wiping your with alcohol. And then you prick yourself. So you can see there's a little bit of blood coming out now. And this is what Rob said. So we would wipe this bit away, because that was not the highest quality then for the analysis. Then we resqueeze and you get a little bit more, and that you see a little drop of blood. You kind of squeeze until you get to the bone now. Put a band-aid on it. Then you easily kind of squeeze that back into the slot there. And what's neat is the app is able to tell you if there's enough sample in the hole in the slot or not. So you'll never be uncertain. So there's a lot of feedback happening through the app itself, so you don't have to worry that you're doing it wrong or right. There's a lot of all the instructions, I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of the instructions were already on the app as well. So you don't have to go back to, we do have reference guides and material, training material, but as you can see, a lot of the instructions are just kind of there on the left-hand side. So yeah. That's pretty much it. So thank you again for the time with that. We can go back to questions if you'd like.
No, absolutely. I think this is great. If there are any more questions, I think we've answered most of them. But feel free to put them in the chat. I'm just looking at other notes that I took to see if there's other questions that might be that we might have. But I think that you've answered a lot of them. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us, to reach out to IVDS if you have any other questions. It says, okay, so here's another question that just came in. Since this is already developed for PKU and others, would this process move pretty quickly for the CPK meter?
Faster than PKU, but unfortunately, all the steps still need to be done. We'll do it with more confidence and some efficiencies because we know how to do them and do it again. But unfortunately, a lot of it is, like I said, stepwise. They can't really do too much in parallel.
Do you know, based on your experience in the PKU community in regards to like the cost and or cost, sometimes once it's FDA approved, it's a lot easier to get insurance coverage for products like this. But can you explain your understanding about any of that at this point?
Yeah, it's tough. So we know the way, I think the way, like, we would have to work with insurance companies and payers to figure out what they see the value of this to be. And unfortunately, it's not fully in our hands. We can prove the value, but at the end of the day, we want to make this accessible. So we've talked through a lot of this, and even with PKU now, we're thinking about creative ways of making this accessible, even if, well, firstly, cost effectiveness, making it is on our end, we can manage costs and make it as efficient as possible for us as a company. By partnering with a bigger company, we can make that even cheaper for us. to make, and so hopefully price. Another, model that we've considered is working with bigger companies like pharmaceutical companies, nutritional company, diet, nutrition companies. It wouldn't be exclusive to them. I think it would be more democratic, but it would be it would they would allow they would sponsor some of this as well to some extent. So we've talked to some interesting models like that. Of course, insurance coverage is the most traditional model that we would work on, and it's really difficult to say a range right now. I'm so sorry, but I think we'd prioritize access over anything. At the end of the day, we don't have shareholders. We're a private company. We're able to do. We have a little bit more flex in how we operate. And as we, get progress and we work with other partners to make this, I think it will hopefully lead to more accessibility than not. And if anything, it will be similar to what you have to pay for today, or the payer, the system have to go through today. And that's kind of as much as I can say at this stage. It's unfortunately not that we have any answers. It's really, if I don't want to index on a price and say it's $5, it's $500, it's $5,000, we simply don't know. We haven't done that work yet. That comes usually later in the process. We're actually starting that work soon for the PKU time process. We might have more information as we get through that with PKU.
But
But
I think you said a really important piece there. You said accessibility, right? And I think that's really helpful for our community to hear, even though there's not a specific number, but like your hearts, is that this can come to the patient community. So you're not trying to outprice it to the point that, only a certain amount of people can get it. And I think that's just, it's really helpful for the patients to hear that you guys are trying really hard and the ability to do that because you are a private company like at this point. So that's super helpful.
thanks.
So another patient asked, what does access look like for other countries? How does that work?
Yeah, so right now the FDA process is obviously very US-centric. As the next prep step in the process is EU getting a CE mark, so that is there as well. Admittedly, just given our size, we haven't been able to do all the regulatory testing, and we're not able to do that in parallel. So we're doing it sort of stepwise, US first, then Europe, and then Japan, and made all major markets, but and then beyond. But I think the main like limiting factor there is just or main limiting factor there is our team and how much we can do at a certain time. Like, yeah, Canada. And so another thing I was going to say is a lot of these markets use reference models. So Canada, for example, is a very good example where if it's approved in the US, the steps to get it done in Canada are actually much more straightforward. Japan is another one where it's similar, where if you're approved in the US, it's easy to get access there. Same with Europe. There's a lot of similarities in what the requirements to getting it done. And so it should be relatively straightforward once the FDA is one of the most rigorous regulatory bodies and scrutinous bodies in this domain. So that is our hopes. But global launch is the idea. There's no reason to keep this centralized anywhere. Wait
Absolutely.
for
Yeah, I think from our perspective, a continuous monitor is not in our pipeline. I think it'll require much different technology, much different engineers, and it's something that would be a long time for us.
Is there? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And you'd have to prove that the interstitial fluid is comparable to blood, right? The blood draw. So there would be a tremendous amount of validation, and you guys can be the judge on whether that would be of value regarding daily CK levels.
Does a device like this have the capacity to measure more than one implication? Like a patient asked in regards, like, could you potentially use the same device if you had to monitor your blood sugar in addition to CPK, or do you need different devices to do, or is it about different test strips, or is that?
So the meter that we have has what they call three lighted emitting diodes. So it can take a single analyte, a dual analyte, or a three analyte panel. So we've accommodated three assays in there. It's just Is glucose of value when you're measuring CK? I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, for our community, often the clinicians are moving away from monitoring glucose if they're also monitoring CPK. But there are definitely patients who have issues with hypoglycemia. And so it really depends on the clinic and it really depends on the clinician as to how they're keeping track of that. So thanks for asking that question. There have been amazing questions that have come through the chat. I just want to thank everybody for joining us today, for asking your questions, for being curious, for listening. I am going to go ahead and stop the recording to see if there's any extra questions that people have, or if you want to unmute yourself and ask questions. So you're more than welcome to do that. But thank you everyone for joining us today. And I hope to see those who've attended today at our FAUD conference. And I went ahead and I put a link to that in the chat because there'll be lots of more amazing conversations similar to this one. There's lots going on in the FAUD community and exciting research being done.
Thank you.